You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 262.
John, were you waiting for me to see if I was going to introduce Punk News Podcast episode 262?
I was, Adam. Were you waiting for
me? Well, you did.
I know. Were you waiting to see if I was going to introduce the Punk News Podcast number 262?
I was. This is how much we've planned for Punk News Podcast episode 262.
Wait, you were going to introduce and I jumped in, or you were waiting for me to introduce and I jumped in?
I don't even know what we're talking about.
Welcome to episode number 262, Punk News listeners. This is Punk News Podcast. This is John G, features editor, and Adam White, managing editor. I don't know if it's just going to be an Adam and John episode today because Mark Little, news editor, reviews writer, might show up. He might not. That's how we roll. That's how – you know, actually, Adam White, why don't you tell the listeners how much planning went into the podcast, that the other podcast that we were just on, compared to the planning that goes into this podcast?
Oh boy. So we just this past Sunday morning, actually, which is not a time when you're supposed to record anything. We were guests on the Everything and the Kitchen Sink podcast, which is a show that we've been on before. Last time on the show, we talked about Joe Strummer for like 2 hours. And this time we talked about Joe Strummer for like 2 hours. That episode will probably be out, I don't know, a couple days before this one comes out. So, we'll post a link to it in the show notes for this episode. There you go. Anyways, but yeah, this was a show where you and I had to go, and we joined the host, Nikki, who is like the world's biggest, most passionate Clash fan. And she wanted us to bring some Strummer and Clash rare stuff to the mix and talk about it. And we planned, John. Well, I don't know about you, but I planned.
Oh, I planned. I came to show my chajones. You know what I mean? Say, oh, I know the Clash.
Yeah, we pulled out, like, you know, not only like songs that, you know, maybe no one except for like, you know, people that like really were following, you know, Joe's side projects and stuff would have ever heard. But then we had all sorts of context about, you know, well, you know, sure, Joe's plays on this song with Jimmy Cliff, but let's talk a little bit about how Jimmy Cliff and the Clash interact, right? And we just had like all kinds of stuff like that, and like it was planning. That's way more planning than we usually do.
And I gotta say, people, Adam White, I didn't even know this. Adam White told this awesome story about a Bono and Mick Jones covers of Joe Strummer, or essentially covers or songs written with Joe Strummer. You have to tune in and listen to that because Adam White really did some in-depth research and planning for that story or the background of that song.
I tried. So yeah. So anyways, that show will be out. It was sort of chaotic. It feels like recording it. So, I don't think it was easy for Nikki to edit. And as far as I know, she's been editing, you know, for the past several days. So that's way more editing than goes into this show. Yeah. So, wow. You know, sometimes you see how other people do this and you realize we're not trying that hard.
But that's our Wednesday quad, you know. We're like Steve Baters, you know. We show up, we get down, we get funky, you know. Maybe it'll be awesome.
We throw up on ourselves. So yeah, so we were on that show. People should go check that out. So if Mark Little shows up, we're just going to introduce him into the middle of whatever we happen to be doing. So look forward to that. And you should, because Mark's one of these guys that has a far deeper baritone, and it'll probably break up the horrible nasal monotony of listening to me and John talk. So
yeah, we really do have kind of high pitched voices, both of us. I mean, I know I do.
You like to think that you're a man, and then you hear yourself on a podcast and you realize that you're just a little boy. that's how I'm operating.
We could never make it
in
radio.
Let's do some mail.
Oh yeah, let's do some mail. All right. So actually, this mail is from Lindsay. She's in a band called Whoopee Sticks. That's the name of her band, Whoopee Sticks. And it addresses a point that I was having at Punk News. And here's the issue. at Punk News, we've got mostly guys that are – actually, for a while, all our news editors were female. We had like 6 female news editors. But now Punk News is back to being about 80% male, 20% female, maybe a little bit less. And I'm constantly trying to get female writers, female editors, female – constantly. I'm trying to get that all the time. And I don't know why – generally speaking, and actually, I'm going to be very open to this entire conversation. I'm not trying to be offensive at all. I'm trying to be politically correct. If I say something that's offensive or incorrect, then let me know. I'm trying to have an open dialogue about this issue. And so if I say something that I guess isn't how you're supposed to frame things, let me know. and we'll go from there. So I'm just being honest. I'm not being judgmental. But for whatever reason, it seems like in punk rock in general, and Punk News as a microcosm for that, I have a much harder time holding on to females in general, and more so, males tend to be more maniacs than females when it comes to punk rock. Like, my maniac writers right now are Ronaldo, Keenan, and Ricky to a degree. Those guys pump out a crazy amount of reviews. It's rare that I have a female that, you know, will rip out 3 or 4 reviews a week. It just doesn't seem to happen that much. Likewise, my news crew, I've got Sam Barrett, who's female, Samantha Barrett, who's female, and she pounds out the news, which is great. But other than that, my hardcore news guys tend to be male generally. And I have a hard time, well, not I, but Punk News seems to have a hard time having females stay for a long period of time. Likewise, if you go to the record convention, we've talked about this before, record conventions are almost always guys. There's more girls than there used to be, but the real diggers, the real maniacs, the guys with bad hygiene, tend to be male. And I don't know why that is. So my question is, and I'm going to throw this out there, and you can answer that, and then we'll get to Lindsay's Mail, which addresses this very issue. And I've talked to some female bands about this before, actually. Is the fact that I have more maniac writers that are male, is that genetic or is that cultural? Flip that. What if the majority, like Punk News right now is the majority is male. I'd like it to be 50-50 exactly. What if it was all females? Would the females that drifted away be more likely to stay just because it is all male, or not all male, but mostly male? It's just a generally unwelcoming environment for females. Not, no one's trying to push females out, but they just feel, I guess, it's like a, quote, stranger in a strange land, you know. And so actually, Adam, and actually I talked to a band about this, and I said, I kind of think that maybe it's genetic. Like, maybe males are just more likely to be goofy and weird and really focus on records and bands to an unhealthy extent, while females maybe have more common sense. The girls in the band I was talking to disagreed entirely, and they said that they think it's entirely cultural. And actually, they said that record collecting, guys are always trying to one-up each other, and that's why it's inherently combative, where females culturally aren't trained, if you will, to be that combative. But then I countered, I say, when I'm talking record collecting with dudes, or anybody, it's not combative for me at all. It's really a bro-down session. So, Adam, before we get to Lindsay's letter, do you have an opinion or a stance on that issue that we have in punk news or the punk rock community as a whole?
Well, I guess there's – I would be hesitant to, like, smush 3 different cultural phenomenon into one, which maybe you're doing a little bit. So the three is that the punk rock in general sense, the people who go to record shows sense, and then like the punk news writing staff, which I don't know. I wouldn't conflate the three of those. Like there might be a commonality between the three. I don't know if it's necessarily the same crowd for each of them. Like I can totally guess why, you know, there might not be a huge female presence that's going to, you know, record show that's, you know, in the ballroom at the Holiday Inn one day.
Well, what's your guess? I don't have a guess for that. Is it just because guys are smelly?
Yeah, basically, like, to be completely stereotypical about it, like, not that, you know, not that I don't think like the female record conducting audience is, you know, they can't get past that. But it's that's to me more of a kind of environment where you're definitely going to have like, you know, like a certain crowd that, you know, is really into that and always goes to those things and they know each other. And, it, you know, there's tons of ways that you could be collecting records and consuming music that aren't predicated on you, you know, going to buy, you know, records out of a dusty bin from some carnies. not to insult the people that sell things at those shows, right? But I can totally see why, you know, how the, at least in given the last few that I've been to, and I haven't been to one in a few years, but like I could see why that might not be everyone's cup of tea. So, you know.
But why? I mean, we don't have to necessarily address this now because it's a long conversation to be had. But at the genesis of record conventions, why isn't it all girls instead of being all guys in the beginning, you see?
Oh, okay. So what you're trying to drive is like, are males, do they tend to be more
obsessive
about like the minutiae of whatever than...
And if so, is that genetic or is it cultural?
Oh, God. See, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure a large part of that has to do with and this is meant as a compliment, but I assume that probably has a large part to do with, like, you know, just women in general being a little bit more, let's say, socially minded. So they might, you know, decide that if they're going to do something with their time and they have some spare time, it's not going to be, you know, digging through a bin to see how many copies of a 1972 Bowie single you can find or something like that. You know, I'm just guessing. I'm trying to compare it to like who I see as like, say, stereotypical sports people. Right. And you know, the people that are like into sports, not in like they have a team that they root for, but I mean like that become like statistics nerds about it. And to me, like that's like another male kind of stereotype. And, you know, it's maybe it's getting like too much into the weeds on one of those issues and not seeing it from maybe a more human and social angle. I don't know. I'm trying not to insult anyone here because I don't really have a good answer to this. As far as the punk, but let's get away from record shows for a sec. I mean, as far as the punk news community, you know, we've always tried to, you know, whenever we're like recruiting, which is not really an active thing that we do because people just sort of show up and start writing for us. That doesn't really have a whole ton of a system. And I say this as the person that's sort of in charge of that. The punk news, you know, we always have, I think from the start, we've had a few, you know, really great female editors that have always been working with us. They've always been outnumbered by the males, except for, like you said, a few years ago. I remember like way back when punk news was first starting out and it was, Aubin was, you know, doing it himself. Even before I had come in there, we had, there's another guy named Kip, I think, who was there at the start, but we had a girl named Meg that was there for the first few years that was doing great, you know, amounts of the punk news content and everything. But then it always feels like the female members of our community sort of, you know, eventually drift away, go find something to do. And I've got to imagine that's, I don't know, I don't feel like we push them away or anything like that because, you know, there is neither a physical office for punk news to have a culture one way or another, nor is the online culture for punk news all that involved. Like, you can pretty much be a complete loner, but write a whole bunch of stuff for punk news and not necessarily have to talk to anyone. So, you know, I'd like to think that there's not like a gross, you know, boys club thing happening on the back end. But, I don't know. I can't really take that perspective because that's not, you know, I've been here too long. Maybe I want to say that, you know what, we've had great luck with some, you know, awesome female writers that have come in and have worked with us for years, but I just assume that they're smarter than us. And eventually they find something to do with their life that's productive. And I look at, say, like Kira, who is doing amazing work for us for a long time. And she did it for a long, long time, longer than I would really expect anyone, to put in, you know, unpaid time working on a weird little blog like this. And then eventually she's decided to, you know, step out and go do something else with her life. And in a way, she's way smarter than me because she did that. I'm still here. But, you know, she put in an amazing amount of work before she left. So I don't want to write off, you know, or anything like the female contributions that we've had or underestimate them or anything like that. I think we're just at a low point now. It feels worse than it is if you add it all up.
So if you're a girl and you want to write for Punk News, now's the time. We got room. And actually, Lindsay,
if you're anyone and you want to write for Punk News, please come contact one of us, and because we could probably use your help, because if you guys aren't helping us, then it's just John. And if it's just John, all the stories are going to be about the Melvins.
If I have my way, they will be. But actually, Lindsay wrote in about this. She's in a band called Whoopi Sticks. She said, I guess the issue for maybe some ladies specifically being intimidated is probably because you guys know what's up. Like, obviously, you are music nerds and you are obsessively knowledgeable about punk. You're out there geeking about rare records and special bands and reading everything is up to date, going to shows all the time, and you guys have knowledge beyond almost anyone, so that's intimidating. Guests and female guests want to be your peers and your equals and feel worthy of contributing to the discussions. That's tough when you two know so much about music. You have to make them feel welcome and give them an out, so if they don't know about something, they don't get embarrassed or have the fact called to light so they can play it off. You just have to make it approachable for women who want to join in. For example, you and Adam educate people on the band and then see what the guest has to add, like you guys usually do, but take it a step further. The guests don't want to ruin their street cred or get embarrassed when they don't know about a band, so maybe don't, I guess, grill them so much about bands. To get a female down for it, you just have to help them believe in themselves. It's tough in this community, in the punk rock community for girls. I'll start that over. It is tough in the punk rock community for girls. People are super judgmental, and they either try to just sleep with you or try to advise you as if they know so much more than you just because they are a dude and you're just some cute girl and, oh, you just need some help. You have to prove yourself. Gender does not make dudes better at music. If anything, many ladies have such a tough time in punk that they have to step it up to be mentionable, not just because they are ladies, but because they, like anyone else in a band, are working hard to make music. When a girl plays music, she often has to work hard, so much harder, to get good songs to share the stage with the boys. My friend Liz, who is a drummer and guitar player, fights to have people say she's a drummer and not a female drummer, because it's like, you're good for a girl, but if you were a guy, who would care? Palm Olive of the Slits, who played with the Slits, rules. Poison Ivy from the Cramps, rules. There are so many female musicians, but it's not important as to the gender, but rather the songs that they make. Being a female musician teaches you to respect yourself and definitely to not be a slutty, because then you get zero respect. If anything, the girls in this music scene have the biggest balls because they have to advance musically twice as much as the fellows to be noticed in the sausage fest that is punk rock, and to be noticed more than being just some cute lady in a band. I definitely want to see more girls out there start bands because it's so rare right now. My bandmates say, oh, I thought being in a band would help me get a girlfriend, but not many girls come to punk shows and definitely left to macho hardcore shows when women are really being super left out big time. We need more women in punk. So I'm really glad that Lindsay wrote in, because I think she has a fairly unique perspective. And so I'm interested in the Punk News commenter's perspective. I don't know if, Adam, you want to reply to her letter or not, or just let it stand for itself.
I think that she vastly overestimates how much you and I know about anything. I'm a barely functioning human being, let alone an expert on anything at all. So I hope that people aren't intimidated to like talk to us about things. But yeah, but I mean, like, hey, I mean, she's living the life way more than I am. So I'm going to take everything that she said at face value. So that's awesome. Thank you so much for writing in.
Thanks for writing, Lindsay. And that you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. I want to keep this discussion going, but more than keeping this discussion going, I want more women at Punk News. I want more women commenters. I want more women in the punk rock scene. This is my platform for 2016. Adam White, let's play a new song and we'll come back. How about that?
Yeah, okay. So we're going to play a song and we're going to come back. So this is one of these situations where if the internet has completely ruined my ability to communicate with other human beings. And so there's this really cool band that is on a really cool label that I talk about on this podcast all the time. So that would be Buzz Records out of Toronto. And Buzz has been behind all sorts of stuff that I played on this show before. We played stuff from, I believe, Century Palm a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and they're putting out some stuff with Buzz. We played something from, well, we're going to talk about them in a few minutes, but Dilly Dally. We've played Mexican Slang. We've played, we've played Grays, of course. These are all bands that are on Buzz. One of the bands that is really, I always hear them spoken about as kind of like the Buzz Records act, but I'd never really gotten into until recently, is a band from Toronto called Hussy. Now, Hussy is spelt H-S-Y. And because I've never actually spoken to a actual meat-based human being in real life about this band, I just assumed they were called HSY until like 20 minutes ago when I was trying to get my shit together for this show. And I was like, oh, it's pronounced Hussy. That's the actual name of the band. I'm glad I don't have to reveal to the world that I have no idea what I'm talking about. And I just did. So there you go. Anyways, the band has a debut full length, which, you know, in this scene doesn't really mean too much because they've had tons of material out, it feels like, on EPs and 7 inches and digitally and stuff like that. But hey, their debut full length is coming out. It's called Basque. It's going to be on 12 inch vinyl and digital on Buzz Records, coming out on September 11th, which is very soon. Hey, that's a Friday. Oh, it's so weird hearing release dates on Fridays. Hey, anyways, so we're gonna play something from HSY, from Hussy, that shows up on their new record Basque. This is sludgy, it's grimy, it's shouting, it's distorted, it's droning. It's all the good things is what this is. The chorus to this song is, it barks at you and is loud and is a little bit like, the first time you hear it, you kind of step back and you're like, ah. So that's all. Yeah, exactly. Everyone's going to do that. They're going to be walking down the street, walking their dog, listening to the Punk News podcast. The chorus and the song's going to kick in. They're going to go, ah, and their dog's going to take off. I'm sorry about that. But yeah, so this song is called Scratch. It's by Hussy out of Toronto. If you're searching for them on the Google, it's HSY, and it's from their upcoming LP Basque. So we're back.
Yeah. You were right, I know. Adam. You were right.
You scared?
I was scared.
We're talking about Buzz. So let's make a really nice seg here, and we'll just talk about Dilly Dally really briefly because, you know, we'll keep on topic. That's how you do a seg, John. So Dilly Dally.
I thought the segue was you change topics, but no one knows because you're so smooth.
Yeah, but then you don't talk about it when you do it like we just did because then it's not smooth and it's belabored.
But is the fact that we're talking about it make it smooth?
This is why we're such professionals.
Adam White, this is one of Adam White's favorite newer bands, Dilly Dally. They released a new video and a new song in the video. It's called Desire. And here's what the front woman, Katie Monks, said. This video is an ode to that youthful part of yourself that lets you escape your daily routine and unleash whatever strange ideas you may have up there in your soul or your mind or whatever. Sex, music, perfume, silk, and swank cologne. I don't give a fuck what it is. Discover what it is you want or need in your life and chase it down with every bit of strength that you've got. And remember, your friends can always help you out. Adam White, did this meet your expectations that you have for this band? Did you enjoy the video?
I've never seen a video from Dilly Dally before, so it was weird seeing them in that kind of context. I've really grown to like Desire. It's definitely a little bit slower than some of the band's 7-inch material that they had put out before that. But someone phrased it really well the other day, where they kind of compared it to the Pixies' Gigantic as far as the kind of style of song it is. And it totally sort of works like it is. It's a very similar song to Gigantic, except that like Katie Monks has this crazy, like half grunge, half Tim Armstrong slur to her singing that is super neat to me. But
Tim Armstrong fronting the Pixies.
Tim Armstrong fronting the Pixies in Seattle in 1990.
Wave of mutilation. I can't do a Tim Armstrong accent, but you can imagine it. You can imagine
Tim Armstrong doing Frank Black.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd never seen a video from this band before. I've seen them live, so I knew their stage presence, and they kind of get that across on the sections of this video where they're playing live and not just like being odd. This is a weird video. It's fun. I never find that I watch a music video ever in my life more than once. So, you know, I've seen this one now. That's cool. John, what do you think? I talk about this band a lot. So you've probably listened to this then. So what's your brain say?
As I've said before, Adam White got me into both the Spits and Titus Andronicus. So I always give Adam White picks the benefit of the doubt. I dug this video, man. I don't know if Dilly Dally would ever be my favorite band based off this, but I dug this video. I love how weird sounding it is. I love how savage and berserk, and it like rips itself apart the whole time. And I also like how she just kind of just yells desire. Like, there's not a whole lot of lyrics to this song. She's just kind of yelling desire, desire, desire over. But she's an incredibly unique sounding singer. I love how berserk and crazy and raw this track is. And I also enjoyed how high production this video is. Very high production, and I think it really worked for this song. Usually I'm against super high production, or maybe it's not even high production. Maybe it just is because technology is so cheap, you can make something look like it's high production if it was cheaply made. But what I like about this song is I like this is a song in the ancient sense, in that it's not anchored to any one particular topic or anything. It dissects and ruminates on a primal human part of the human id, if you will, without necessarily even coming to any sort of conclusion. It's more of an observation than it is a statement. And that's why I enjoyed about it. And I think it sounds cool.
Yeah, I really like this band's sound, and I think that the, you know, live, they're one of those bands where like everything is turned up to 11, and they're just, you know, they're just kind of torturing out the songs in a way that really works. I'm really curious to see like what Attention will do to this band, because they're starting their. Their journey, like they're starting their time when everyone's starting to click in and pay attention to them, by being like super raw and super weird. So, you know, what does that sound like, you know, after the glowing Pitchfork review and then, you know, the follow-up album or whatever, like can you hold on to that, or do you clean everything up?
Do you think,
I don't know if I want to hear this band all cleaned up, but That's just my that's my gut reaction whenever any band that I like starts to get attention. I'm just like, oh no.
Do you think this band is in danger of the Pitchfork super hype and then the Pitchfork subsequent super smackdown?
I don't know. I don't know if Pitchfork has that much power anymore, if anyone really gives a shit what they talk about. But, I mean...
They nuked Ceremony. I mean, they nuked Ceremony. I was
They did. I think that part of the problem with Ceremony is that, like, I think that Ceremony, more than any band, they sort of needed external validation for that record to work. Because let's say you're the hardcore kids that would have been listening to Ceremony back in the day, and you have not taken this, you know, this journey that ends at Enjoy Division with them, right? Well, you're probably not into that sound because, you know, it's not a sound that you're into. So if you're going to, you know, so radically change your genres from one album to another, you kind of need the rest of the music world to kind of step up and be like, whoa, all you hardcore kids that don't like the new Ceremony record are crazy because it's insanely good. And like that kind of validation would propel them. But, you know, for a band like this, for like Dilly Dally, that is, I want to say that like amongst that Toronto noise punk scene, you know, has a lot of respect and everyone seems to like them. I don't know if they necessarily need the Pitchfork praise to keep doing what they're doing or not do what they do.
Mm-hmm. I'll stop talking about Ceremony. It was just such a brutal beatdown. I will not talk about it anymore on the Punk News podcast.
It's like you have scars from that review.
I guess what bothers me about that review is it was well written technically. Like from the technical standpoint, it was well written. But there was such meanness and such subjective hatred towards the band that wasn't justified by the music itself. Led me to believe that the writer was on a personal agenda and not really doing what a critic is supposed to do. And that's why it bothered me a great deal. But it was done with style, which is always the worst. You know what I mean? So
that's the Pitchfork thing though, right? Yeah. We're gonna potentially say something that is either, you know, completely unkind in a way that doesn't really you know, benefit a review of a record, or we're going to say something that is like completely obtuse, but is clever word, but it's some clever wordsmith thing. And, you know, the fact that we're doing it in like 45 paragraphs and, with a lot of flourish is going to make it work. So I don't know. I feel like a lot of people see through that these days. Like, I don't want to, you know, if you're a reviewer for Pitchfork, like that's great. You're probably a way better writer than I am. I'm certain that you are, but like, I don't know if the rest of the music world still holds them up to a standard. I think that their shtick is clearly showing and people, you know, people are aware of what a Pitchfork review sounds like these days. Right. So it's one of those things. John, let's talk about sandwiches.
Eat a sandwich. Your band broke up. Eat a sandwich.
So basically, as I'm sure you guys are aware, having been on the internet, there's this Twitter account called Nihilist Arby's, and it is a anonymously run Twitter account, or at least it was, that purported to be a like the official Arby's account. Like they were all done up like that. So, you know, the website link was to Arby's.com and their picture was a picture of a sandwich and all that. But everything that they post was just straight nihilism and really hilarious. And just about like the bleakness of existence and how like nothing matters. And, you know, your embrace of Arby's food should just be part of the fact that nothing matters and you don't care. And it gets a huge amount of attention. And I mean, even the fact that we're going to get to the punk rock connection on this in a second, notwithstanding, like everyone seems to know about this. I'm looking at, there's 107,000 followers to this Twitter account. And so they would post things like here. I'm just going to start rifling through some tweets here because they make me laugh. Let's see. Adventure. Huh. Excitement. Huh. Arby's craves not these things. You are reckless. Not that Arby's gives a shit. Taste the dark side. Eat Arby's. Line up to die. Oh God, why did I use this word? Why did I pick that one? What is that?
Read it.
Lugubrious? Let's do that. Line up to die, Lugubrious, as the masters herd you towards the killing floor. As go the cows, so go men. There is no god here, only Arby's. Arby's puts its pants on in the morning just like you, paralyzed by creeping dread as we speed ever towards inevitable doom. Eat Arby's. What else we got here? This one's a little rhyme. Arby's for lunch, Arby's for dinner. In this fetid hellscape, there are no winners. Arby's tomorrow, Arby's today. Nothing certain but death and decay. So this is all the Sting tweets all day long is just things. I mean, and sometimes it ties into like current events, and then sometimes it's just complete nonsense. So, I mean, here when they took down the Confederate flag. Thank God that flag is coming down. If only there was a God. If only putting some dumb flag in the trash could erase life's misery. Eat Arby's. And just things like that all day long. So don't take my horrible reading of it and my inability to pronounce words as evidence. You should go read this. It's actually really funny. And turns out it's Brendan Kelly of the Lawrence Arms, which was hinted at because there was a Nihilist Arby's video that came out not too long ago that featured Brendan Kelly, but no, it is apparently him. There was an article in Adweek that refers to Brendan as the twisted, brilliant copywriter behind the Nihilist Arby's Twitter account. That's the first time I've heard anyone refer to Brendan Kelly as a human being that has a real job. But they actually call him an advertising copywriter for different agencies in the Chicago area. So that's super interesting to me. So anyways, yeah, Brendan is Nihilist Arby's. He is the one that has made this happen. There's an interesting little conversation that they have over on Adweek about it. And actually, there was a the actual Brendan Kelly, not the Nihilist Arby's account. Let me pull this up because I want to read it. He went the other day and he posted a picture of himself at Arby's with a puppy and a bag of Arby's and a letter with the Arby's letterhead on it. And the letter says, "Cheer up, buddy. You live in a world with puppies and sandwiches, Arby's." So I guess they're at least somewhat aware of what he's doing in their name. But I don't know. It's super dark and super funny and super weird. And it's apparently the Lawrence Arms guy that's doing it. So there you go. John, before this story broke, were you a convert? Were you a devotee of the Arby's nihilism like the rest of us? Or
yeah, I mean, I was aware of it. I actually had no idea it was Brendan Kelly at all until they posted that video a little while ago that people were like, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. I thought it was really, really funny. And I actually wasn't even sure that it wasn't official at the beginning. It kind of became – because, you know, like snarky fast food is kind of a thing right now. You know, like the Colonel Sanders is snarky now. Wendy's is snarky. I think a Burger King is snarky. So, you know, maybe it was like a viral thing, whatever you will. But I think it's hilarious. And I don't really know what Brendan Kelly gets out of it. I guess just internet fame, internet dollars.
I think it's just being like, I would have to imagine that he's just being a weird dude. Like the way that Adweek puts it, you know, they make it sound like, you know, oh, this is the latest thing from the brilliant mind of this from this ad writer. I don't know maybe if even Brendan Kelly really thinks of it that way and if he just thinks he's just being weird on the internet, which is kind of what he does. I mean, it's always been clear to me that this is definitely not some sort of viral wink, wink, nudge, nudge thing that Arby's themselves are trying to do, because some of the stuff it posts is super offensive or just like super crass in a way that like no viral campaign would, like no matter how snarky or weird a company would not go here. So like, you know, like Burger King had all those commercials with like that, like creepy, you know, King mask, right? And they were clearly running those commercials with that mascot because they're like, this is pretty creepy. But then like, you know, you read a few of these and you're like, no, this is way beyond you know, beyond like playfully creepy and into like no one in a corporation would actually do this. Like, and you take the two latest ones and they like, and they are, well, like the one is just like gross and the other one is like something that no corporation would do. And we'll do these right now because I like reading these. Today's says, if you've never shot heroin into a black vein on the top of your dick, then you're not the guy in our bathroom sink right now. Enjoy Arby's. Right. So like that's corporation funny. Wouldn't do that. But the other one, and the one that like some people actually responded to them, like were like, maybe that's bad taste. Right. This one was yesterday. All miners either get fucked by that guy from Subway or by the relentless persistence of time or both. Eat Arby's, for life is bleak.
See, here's the thing. Does Brendan Kelly go for like the penis slash sex joke too much? Like,
well, see, that this is more. See, I think that is the Brendan showing here, because Brendan's own Twitter account is like mostly about dicks. So this is one of the first times that the Arby's one has gone there. But the thing about the guy from Subway, someone responds, I love your stuff, but I think this is in poor taste. Unless you're really a nihilist and don't give a shit. Right? So like, I get, like, hey, if it's a if that's the thing and it's truly a nihilist, then I guess they don't give a shit. But yeah, so anyways, I am super surprised actually that it's Brendan Kelly. Once that video came out that he was in, I was a little bit worried that like it wasn't going to be Brendan, but it was going to be like some douchebag music writer that we all know that like knows Brendan Kelly. And I was like, that would be disappointing if this wasn't an actual funny thing, but was just like basically like one of us being a dick. You know, I wouldn't want that. That wouldn't be fun. That doesn't seem to be the case unless it's just a some sort of false flag thing that he's doing, but I don't think it's that. So Brendan Kelly is Nihilist Arby's. I don't know what else to say. You guys should go follow that account because it's funny. And Brendan's in a band people like. That's where I'm gonna go with that. I don't know what else to say. John?
Yes, Adam.
Okay, The Garden.
The Garden.
The Garden. So The Garden is a band. They have signed to Epitaph Records. Epitaph is going to release their new LP called Ha Ha on October 9th. This is going to be a joint release between Epitaph and Burger Records. And you're a big fan of the Burger Records.
I'm a big fan of The Garden. I'm a big fan of Burger Records, baby.
Yeah. So the debut video from the album for the first single, I guess, is called All Smiles Over Here. You can find that over on Punk News right now. John, apparently this is one of these bands that you have talked incessantly about, but I forgot that they were a band that we've ever talked about until I was looking at this. So let's pretend my brain doesn't work. And who are The Garden again?
The Garden is, I think, one of the most punk rock bands out there right now, and a super weird band. It's two brothers. It's Fletcher and Wyatt Shears. And actually, they're sons of one of the guys from Shattered Faith, which was a semi-popular Oxnard punk band way back in the early 80s. What they do is they play bass and drum, and that's it, and they both sing. And the songs, well, originally the songs were all either like 30 seconds to a minute, super, super aggressive, super loud, but not like I'm going to beat you up aggressive, like kind of like Wire-ish, like scary, cold, very weird. Their songs are all really weird. I don't even know if I know what a single one is really about, to tell you the truth. And so their songs are very minimalist, but very charged, very jacked up, and live, it is insane. They climb up the walls, they swing from the ceiling, they jump into this audience, and for lack of a better word, their audience, see, they play with a lot of, quote, hipster bands or whatever, and so the audience is very hipsterish. So even though their audience is hipsterish, if that's still a problem, whatever you want to call that crowd, the Pitchfork crowd, I don't know, the Vice crowd, whoever those people are, it's not the Rancid crowd. They're surprised because most of those bands really aren't that crazy. And The Garden, they're both brothers. They're actually also fashion models. And they're both like 6'5" and super duper skinny, like too skinny. And they get up there and they just go berserk. They jump on the audience. They climb all over. It's one of the most thrilling modern punk shows I've seen. after they did kind of like their sparse thing, then they kind of started messing around with electronics a little bit. So they put out some songs that were strictly electronics. Didn't love those songs, but I liked how they were doing unique, weird things and trying something new. It seems like this new album, which actually they've already released some singles, this is the first video single, is going to be basically the perfect merging of those two. It's mostly live instrumentation with a little bit of keyboards or whatever put on top for flavor, if you will. They've got this new track called all the titles are really weird too. The song is called All Smiles Over Here, and I love this song for a lot of reasons. I love because it's not clear what's going on at all, but I love how he's yelling, "Take your sunglasses off and put them back on again. I've got a force field, and I hope no one breaks it." And I love how it's not, "I've got a force field that no one can break." It's, "I've got a force field, and I hope no one breaks it." And I don't even really know what that means, but it's an aggressive song that is sort of expressing a certain vulnerability in it, I guess. But I also like how the song is not like a three-chord chorus song. Like, it doesn't really have any standard structure at all. It keeps morphing. And the punk kids kind of, well, the punk kids kind of hate, like one person said, here we go. And this is by a guy that generally does pretty good comments, but he says, "I tried to watch it, but I couldn't stop laughing. I half did expect the dude to ask for a Pepsi in those verses. It's hard to say the song is devoid of any melody or hook. Is that what the kids are into now?" That's kind of why, I mean, isn't one of the tenets of punk rock, you don't have to have melody if you don't want it? Isn't that what Discharge prove? Isn't that one of the tenets of punk rock, you don't have to have a hook if you don't want it? Isn't that what bands like Graf Warlock proved, or Napalm Death? And that's, I like how savage and weird this is. A lot of people are making fun of this band for how they dress, but, I mean, they dress differently. Isn't that what punk rock's all about? I think this band is extremely punk rock. I am very excited for this new album, and I really dug this song.
I did not know what to make of this song at first, not having recalled any of this band's past material. And, you know, like with kind of like the slick video and the fact that it's a song that plays with repetition to the degree that it did, I was half expecting this at some point to become some horrible electronic music thing that Epitaph probably has bands that play.
Right? We got to talk about how Epitaph signed this. This is a very weird signing for
Epitaph. Yeah. So I was expecting that, but that didn't happen. And then as this was going, I'm thinking like, this is kind of sort of garagey in the sense that I like a lot of bands that do the things that this band is doing. So I was a little bit, you know, I wasn't a believer, and then I was curious. But then the fact that Berger is behind this and that you've apparently talked about this band so much and everything, I'm curious to check this out now. As far as the Epitaph thing goes, you know, it's weird that this is their reputation, but that was the reason I was going to write it off, was that I was, you know, we've talked about this so much, but just, you know, just like Epitaph these days is so inconsistent with what they're putting out. They're not playing to anyone's scene anymore, and they are not shy to release something that appeals strictly to like douchebag 15-year-olds and no one else. So, you know, I see that Epitaph has signed some band I'm not immediately familiar with, and I assume it's like a bunch of, you know, glam emo dickbags and not a band that I should actually go check out. And that's kind of sad given how much stuff Epitaph has released that I have sitting on a shelf somewhere. But yeah, John, Epitaph's behind this. That's
Do you think they're going in a new direction? Do you think Mr. Brett wants to release something he personally likes and doesn't expect to make a lot of money off it? Side note, this band is actually semi-big now. They've got 20,000 fans on Facebook. Not that that means anything, but that's bigger than your average punk news band. You know what I mean? And I would point out, I did a review of this band when they only had 50 likes on Facebook. I'm just saying.
I have given up trying to understand what Brett does and why. And I actually genuinely think that he likes all of the bands that he puts out. Whether the reason for that is you know, that, you know, he likes them because he thinks that they're going to help make, you know, make everybody's salary, or he likes them because, you know, he generally loves that band's sound. I don't know, but I think Brett genuinely does like the stuff that he's been putting out, weird and scattershot as it's been. So, you know, like this is a California band, right? So
yeah, Southern California.
So it you know, if they've been getting buzz in that scene, they've probably definitely come across, you know, to people that run Epitaph's desks. So
I'm surprised they signed to Epitaph, though, because their audience is, quote, very cool, you know, and I don't think Epitaph is cool with non-mall kids, you know what I mean? So it's a very unique signing for them. I'd expect them to sign really to either Vice Records or maybe Polyvinyl or something like that, not Epitaph, you know. So anyway, I'm interested. If you get a chance to see this band, don't take my word for it. Go see them live. Decide yourself. Let's play one of their tracks. This is not the new track. This one is off one of their EPs. I love this song. This is The Garden doing Crystal Clear. Check them out on Burger Records. They've got a ton of stuff on Burger Records and something coming up on Epitaph. So this is The Garden doing Crystal Clear.
All right, we're back.
Oh, Adam, but, I thought you were waiting for me. I was waiting for you.
Damn it, John. Oh, this episode. I don't know. Mark Little should be here to save us from just walking all over each other. I don't know where he is, John.
Well, I actually do know where he is. He sent us a message at like 10:50, if the kids want to know about this. He sent me a message at 10:10. And then we were ranting, and I sent him a message back at 10:14. But by the time 10:14 came around, he decided to go out to get something to eat, so he's gone. So we had a 4-minute window to catch him.
Oh. Now I'm hungry.
Are you hungry Great. For tunes?
I'm hungry for whatever Mark's got.
I met Travis Fristo when we were 15 years old at Satellite High School. We bonded over our mutual love of music, writing about music, and dark offbeat humor. The fact that we were both born in the DC area and knew many of the same places only cemented our bond. We took journalism class together, and we had 2 years of high school newspaper, and it was at that time that we decided that we wanted to room together at the University of Florida, and we spent our freshman year at Rawlings Hall with no air conditioning. Travis and I leaned on each other hard that year, as close friends will do. We often referred to each other as the yin to the other's yang, and that continued on through some of our last letters. It's because of Travis that I learned about DC hardcore. I had moved to Florida when I was 10, and Travis moved when he was 15. So he had actually seen bands like Embrace, early Fugazi, Rites of Spring, Government Issue, Dag Nasty. And in fact, my time seeing Fugazi in Gainesville were with my yang. The movie Salad Days, which recently came out, the documentary about DC hardcore, totally makes me think of him. I've referred to Travis a lot as my punk rock guru. I helped him cut and paste one of his first zines on our dorm room floor, listening to Jello Biafra's spoken word album about the Dead Kennedys trial. We also saw Radon for the first time together, and Travis would later on go on to write a book about them with Aaron Comet Bus in 2013. It's truly been amazing for me to see the kind words written about one of my oldest friends over the past few weeks. It makes me proud to have known him, and makes me miss him even more. Travis had such an enormous impact on me as a friend. And it's truly heartwarming to see how he affected others through his activism, his writing, and his music. One of the last pieces of new writing that I saw him do was with Razor Cake in July, where he wrote about Lance Hahn. When I look him up on the internet and I see all the different tributes that have been written about him, one of the bands that he played in that keeps getting mentioned is Reactionary 3. And as heartbroken as I am right now, it's truly an honor for me to be able to play this on the Punk News Podcast. This song comes from their 2002 cassette-only demo. Ryan Quinney's on bass, Mike Stoltz on drums, and Travis Fristo on vocals and guitar. I love you, my brother. Straight out of Gainesville, this is Reactionary 3 with Pro Tools.
We're just going to have to settle for ska punk. So we're going to talk about the Interrupters. We've talked about the Interrupters on this show before. I feel like I've said that a lot tonight. We've talked about lots of things before.
Well, we've had a lot of I think it's good to have circular discussions and themes throughout the podcast.
But I don't need to keep saying that. I should just talk. So the Interrupters have released a music video for a song called Take Back the Power. It comes from the band's, I believe it comes from the band's 2004 self-titled full-length The Interrupters. Is that true?
I don't even know. Yes, I think it does.
Yeah, so it does. It comes from that record that came out. This record was, I believe, produced by Tim Armstrong, was it not?
Yeah, it definitely was, yeah.
Yeah, so the Interrupters are the female-fronted, like, suit-and-tie ska punk band that has been, I think, has been the only thing that Hellcat has released recently. Is that true?
Probably in like 3 or 4 years or close to it. Yeah.
Hellcat record.
I'll do research while you keep talking.
Yeah. Let's just all Google stuff instead of actually. Holy fuck. Yeah. Okay. Wow. All right. The last things that Hellcat has released were, of course, there was that Rancid album that came out, but you know.
Oh yeah. That really brought him back.
There's that Rancid album. But then before that, before 2014, they reissued some Mescalero's stuff in 2012, but that doesn't really count. The last new things they released were in 2011.
Yeah, and actually, look at, they released a bunch of stuff in 2011. Weird. Actually, not that much, actually.
So, yeah, all right, that's odd. So anyways, the Interrupters, LA-based band, a band that has gotten a lot of flack from, I don't know if from the from the world in general, or if it's just like the punk news commenters. Have you gotten a sense for the reaction to this show elsewhere, or to this band elsewhere? Like,
in some degree, yes. And here's why. They kind of came out of nowhere, honestly. Like, they were not that well known before their album came out. But in the LA scene, they are kind of considered like a cool local band that everybody likes. Like, a lot of towns have a band that, like, isn't necessarily anybody's favorite band, but people really enjoy seeing them when they're there. Like, in the Bay Area, and I mean this respectfully, La Plebe, which is huge in the Bay Area, but maybe not so big out of the Bay Area. People love La Plebe in the Bay Area. Or maybe in Philadelphia, good example might be, I don't know, maybe Restorations or somebody like that. Of course, Restorations are kind of big everywhere, aren't they? But, you know, like, there are maybe Mischief Brew is a good example. Mischief Brew is huge in Philadelphia, sort of known outside of it, but not nearly as big as they are in Philadelphia.
Okay, here, I'm looking at this story over on the Punk News Facebook page, only because if no one has ever seen this, if you look at the same Punk News story on Facebook and compare it to, like, on Punk News,
it's almost always flipped.
It is night and day, the kind of reaction. And yeah, people are stoked about this on Facebook. You know, someone says, here, over the last 2 years, this is the hardest working band in the world. Someone else, you know, saw them supporting Bad Religion and it was awesome. So, hey, people seem to like this. So I'm tempted for some reason to side with the cynics on this group.
And
I don't know why.
I know why.
I was a ska punk person. I was a Hellcat Records devotee at one point, let alone just being a ska punk person. This band is doing so much stuff that is like note for note stuff that I liked at a time and more or less still like. I never turned my back on ska punk so much as I didn't think that there was much interesting ska punk happening. I don't really see why I should not like this, except for maybe it seems a little bit too easy for me. Like, it's not challenging me at all. Like, it's not bad. But it feels a little, I guess, on the nose.
I have a theory, but it's not a theory that I even subscribe to. But here's why I think they have a whole lot of cynics. Two reasons. First of all, this band did come out of nowhere, and it's like, oh, look, here's Tim Armstrong's favorite new band. You should know this band. And people are like, why is this band that no one's ever heard of that just happens to be friends with Tim Armstrong getting all this exposure? It should be my favorite hardworking band that nobody knows about. They're out there all the time. This band hasn't put in the hours that my favorite band has. The only reason this band is favorite is due to nepotism, because they know Tim Armstrong. That's part one. I don't agree with that, but that's the perspective. The second is, and I'm going to speak frankly, and like I said, if I say something that's improper, let me know, but I'm just going to be honest. Like, the singer in this band, she's very good looking. Do you agree, Adam?
She is not bad looking.
Right. I think she's very good looking. And so I think a lot of punk news people say, a lot of punk news guys, it's like the prom girl. I mean, the prom queen syndrome. It's like, why does this pretty girl get to have it all? Why does she get to be on stage singing? Why does she get to be friends with Tim Armstrong? My band is working hard and we don't get anything at all, and she's getting this just because she's pretty. Now, I don't agree with that, mind you, but I think it's the prom queen syndrome. I think if this girl was not as pretty as she is, people would say, oh yeah, the Interrupters are fine. I think if she was a guy, people would say, oh yeah, the Interrupters are cool. Like that band Static Thought, like that's just Rancid's friends. They're not that great, but people say, oh yeah, Static Thought, they're fine, they're cool or whatever. But because this girl is so good looking, because she's so pretty, people get mad that they think she's achieving what she's achieving by the mere fact that she's good looking. I don't agree with that, mind you, but I think that's the mindset.
Oh, if that's the reason, that's such a shit reason to write off a band, right?
But see, people always attack her as a female. They don't attack her as a singer. They say that chick or that girl, which leads me to believe that. You know what I mean?
People are horrible. I don't know. I think the reason why I can't seem to get into these guys, it might genuinely be like an age thing. where just like there, you know, this is some sign of me being old now, where like there was a time and place where, you know, this would be the best thing in the world for me. And if, you know, I've kind of been there, done that. And like, is it that sort of thing? Like, I'd hate for that to be the reason.
Well, what a shitty,
you know, place to be. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't see, I've never saw in my life, I've never seen musical taste as something that has to like progress up this ladder where you're into simple bands, then you're into more complicated bands, then the simple bands are too simple for you, so you know you don't like them anymore. The idea that you constantly have to progress on this taste escalator, and then I don't know. I don't subscribe to that, because where do you end up? You end up like what? Listening to Prague or something?
No. You end up listening to Sonic Youth, and thinking Sonic Youth is the greatest thing ever, or Spoon, or what's the band, or Yo La Tengo, or all those mid-tempo alt rock bands.
I don't know, but like even those bands, I feel like are pretty straightforward. I mean, like God, like no, you got to get way further up someone's butt than Spoon or Sonic Youth. But in any case. I've never subscribed to that idea, so I hate to take that as the reason why I'm not super into the Interrupters.
Adam, for you and for me, I don't think it's that. Here's what I think it is for you and me. I like this band. I don't love this band. The reason I like this band, the reason I don't love this band, is because what they do very well, but I've heard it before, and it's not exceptional what they do. I think this band could be exceptional if they did something that was new or had not been done before. Then they've got the talent, and they certainly have the technical ability. This young lady is a phenomenal singer. I think she's a wonderful singer. But they need to do something that isn't just ska that's been done before. Agree?
Yes, my very John Gentile opinion on this is that there's nothing dangerous about it.
Right.
Right? Like there's – it's not – It's doing like a very, very narrowly focused, you know, 1998 version of ska punk very well, but lots of bands did, and I've heard them, so I guess that's where I'm coming from. But hey, you know what? This video is fun. There was a time and place where like I'm pretty sure that like I would travel to another city to see a band that's a bunch of people in suits and, you know, with horns and stuff playing music in a veterans hall. So that, you know, this is very, it's close to my close to the heart of what I was into when I first started getting into punk rock. So,
That's not a symptom of your taste being now erudite or more sophisticated. That's when you're a young guy, you got a crew, you're just going around looking to have fun. Or even if you don't have a crew, you're just going out to have fun and maybe meet people you know there. Back then, it's not even about the band as much as it's about the social situation. You see, you're not looking for those social situations right now, so your demand for an exceptional band is higher. So if a great ska band came along, I think Adam White would be into it. But this ska band is good, not great, so it doesn't necessarily tickle your fancy like it would when you were 15, because it's fun and you're meeting people and having a good time that way.
Yeah, I can buy that. So anyways, Interrupters video.
I want this band to succeed. I don't love this record. I don't love this band. I think it's okay. But I like these guys just because they get so much hate. I think they're doing it for the right reasons, I think. I want them to succeed.
Yeah, I don't want them to not succeed. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It doesn't sound like. I'm making no sense tonight. Anyways, let's move on. Interrupters video. There you go. John, I'm going to talk to you about a band now that we've never talked about before. Rudimentary Peni.
Rudimentary Peni.
I feel like this is like got to be like your number four band after the Melvins and the Dwarves and Bad Canoe. It's Rudimentary Peni. So, all right. So Southern Records has announced plans to re-release the classic compilation EPs of RP, by the aforementioned Rudimentary Peni. The compilation collects the band's first two 7-inches, and it is going to be out, according to the label, soonish. And this follows a bunch of other reissues of the band's stuff, including Death Church, Archaic, Cacophony, And Pope Adrian 37th psychocrist.
Pope Adrian the 37th psychiatric.
Sure. Okay. Anyways, John, let's say I'm like one of our young listeners and I've never ventured into rudimentary peni here. Is EPs of RP where I should get started, or
no?
What should I be doing?
Rudimentary Peni is a phenomenal band. In case you don't know, extremely unique. In case you don't know, they were affiliated with the Crash Crew back in the day. They sort of invented death rock, if you will, not goth, mind you, death rock. And their landmark release is Death Church, that's the one you want to check out. That's their first full album. It just got remastered. It sounds great. Check out Death Church. Then if you want something that's pretty far out, check out Cacophony. If you want something that's super far out, check out Pope Adrian. That is one of the craziest, most insane records you'll ever hear. But it's not where you want to start with Rudimentary Peni. It's a very difficult record. Also, if you want something that's just straight up awesome, three-chord, nasty, wild, incredibly insightful, but terse in words, punk rock, check out Archaic. So I would say check out Death Church, check out Archaic, then go on to Cacophony. The first two EPs find the band finding their footing. The second one was produced by Penny Rimbaud of Crass. They're excellent records. And the reason I want to bring this up – well, A, I want to bring this up because Rudimentary Peni is an amazing band. Southern Records has been doing an amazing job with these reissues. They've been putting them on beautiful 12-inch vinyl. They've been blowing frontman Nick Blinko's art up really big. He's an outsider artist, and he is an amazing, amazing artist. But what's lame is before every these reissues have been taking them a while because they're really working on making them good. They announced them, but what happens is there's been a bootleg company that before the reissues come out, this bootleg company rushes out a shitty bootleg crappy version 3 months ahead of time. The record stores don't realize that there's bootlegs and they buy the shitty bootleg one 3 months ahead of time. And then when the real one comes out, they don't buy it because we've already got a copy of that record. And it's super lame. And if I saw that bootlegger, I'd punch him in the face because he's the reason. And it's a guy because they got the same marks on all of them. Like the same, like he's even put his own label on it. It's the Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I forget the name of the label. He's rushing them out simply to capitalize on Southern Records' effort and also just to steal money from the band, which that's an asshole thing to do. These records would come out quicker if this bootlegger didn't exist because they'd be able to recoup their money quicker and put the records out sooner. But they're having a really tough time even breaking even on these releases because this bootlegger keeps rushing out shitty inferior versions. So if you're listening, you probably aren't. But if you're a listening guy that is doing the Rudimentary Peni bootlegs with Leatherface on the back, you're an asshole. And if you are a shopper and you see a Rudimentary Peni with Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre on the back, that's a bootleg. Do not buy it. And maybe even tell the shop owner if they care. It's a bootleg and they should return it because it's a piece of shit. It sounds like shit. I think it's taped from the CD and a shitty version of that. It's lame. And actually, well, this is kind of inside school or outside of school, but I think it's old news now so I can talk about it. Southern Records was going to release a remastered version of Antisex album, but this bootlegger rushed out the bootleg version and screwed the pooch, and they couldn't make it back because the bootlegger rushed out the bootleg version, and so the sales would mean they would take a loss due to this bootlegger rushing out this inferior version. So that guy's a dick.
Yeah.
I mean, what's his deal, Adam? He's just an asshole, right? Like there's no way to justify that, right?
Okay, let's pretend that like you're just trying to make a buck and you don't give a shit about art or anything like that. How much of a market is there for Rudimentary Peni vinyl?
Probably $5,000 a record.
I don't know. Could there not be? I don't know. That's not enough to justify.
It is if you're a scumbag. Scumbags will do anything for money. You know what I mean? Even if it's $20, they'll cheat you. You know, he's just a scumbag. You know, he's not doing it for the art. I mean, like, there are some bootleg. I mean, I'm pretty anti-bootleg almost across the board. But if something's super rare and the only way to get it is a bootleg, I that's okay, I guess. But he knows they're coming out. He's just a douche, you know? And he's hurting the band. He's hurting the label. And he's hurting the consumer because he's putting out shitty versions. He's just a dick.
Now, is this something that like the fan base is well aware of, or do they just keep showing up and showing up at record stores kind of thing?
Well, part of it, the fan base is crust punks, and crust punks sometimes bizarrely value the bootleg over the original copy. Sometimes it's really weird. I don't understand it. Like they're like, oh, I've got a bootleg of that. It's like, screw the bootleg, get the real one, you know. But a lot of people just don't know. And you know, Rudimentary Peni is a very mysterious band, so not everyone knows a whole lot about them. So the fact is, I would say 70% of people, 60-70% of people buying bootlegs don't realize it's a bootleg.
Hmm. John, this last story sucks.
Yeah, man, this is a real bummer. Dez Kadena, you know, who's one of the most famous punk rockers ever. He was in Black Flag. He was in the DC3, which is a great, great band. If you haven't checked that out, check out the DC3. That's Dez Kadena's band. And also, lately, the Misfits for the past 10 years or so. Well, as we know, Dez Kadena left the Misfits earlier this year. It wasn't exactly clear why, but people were talking about maybe it was a health scare issue. Well, it turns out it was, unfortunately, a health issue. Dez Kadena had cancer, and here they put up this post online. Dez has just finished debilitating radiation treatments and is confident he will return to active performance within a year, which is great. So Dez has to take a long break from touring and recording, and he has no other income to pay for the quite extensive treatment and doctor bills. So it looks like Dez Kadena had cancer or still has it, but his treatment is going well, which is great. But he started a GoFundMe campaign to raise money for his medical bills. So I don't know what else we can say, but, you know, best wish to Dez Kadena. He's a legend. I really hope he makes it. Everybody hopes he makes it through it. Looks like he's doing well, so I'm very happy about that. It's just a bummer, man. And what can I say? It sucks, dude. Cancer sucks.
Yeah, it's – there's not really much you can say about this. I mean, it's a horrible thing for anyone to have to deal with. And, you know, Dez is now publicly dealing with it. So, oh, man.
Some people were saying, well, Dez, you should have invested your money better, which is freaking lame, dude. Like, you should never bag on anybody that has cancer. I mean, cancer is serious business. But, like, it's like, you know, Greg Ginn cheated them out of all their Black Flag money. So, like have some sympathy. I feel like punk alternates between having way too much sympathy for even assholes to having no sympathy whatsoever. It all seems so counterintuitive, you know?
That's such a weird thing to bag on someone about, is that, like, I mean, there's one thing about, like, saving your money for, you know, in case of emergencies. Usually when people are saying, you know, in case of emergencies, I'm assuming they're not meaning if you have, like, full-blown cancer that you all of a sudden need to – you know, to deal with. That's that might be with, you know, the depending on the treatments and everything that you have to go to and how advanced it is, you know, you're way out of, like, you know, emergency fund territory depending on the scenario there. So that's, you know, that's not a helpful comment at all. I don't know what that accomplishes. I don't know what people accomplish going onto the internet and saying something like that. Like, I don't know who that helps or who that insight is supposed to get a rise out of, or what?
It's somebody who has not yet lived a variety of life experiences. That's who says that. You know what I mean? So I mean, I think it's fair to say we all wish Dez the best. We're huge Dez fans, and we're looking forward to his recovery. What can I say?
Yeah, get well soon, Dez. So now what, John?
I guess we got to wrap it on up, Adam. This was a lengthier podcast, if you will. The Adam and John Show, back again.
That wasn't the plan, but we did it. So if anyone's listening to this show, make sure you check out the latest episode of Everything in the Kitchen Sink. It should be up on Friday. It's me and John.
Last Friday, so it'll be up now, I think.
Yeah, it'll be out by the time this show goes live to people. So, yeah, last Friday. You know, hopefully it's a good one. It was a fun conversation. If we don't bumble over everything too much, then it'll be worth checking out. So there you go. Go check that out. There'll be a link with this story. If you actually want to go to Nikki's website, it's eatks.net. And it'll be posted there as well. So yeah, if anyone wants to email us, it is podcast@punknews.org. And that's all. We'll see you guys next week.